All right, thank you so much, sir. It's certainly a privilege to hear God telling us what true religion is. Because there are times when folks get the wrong impression and do things ritualistically as opposed to by the Spirit. And so he started out by saying the fast. Well, the fast is supposed to guide you to behave a certain way. And so he's really metaphorically transposing that position onto the reader to let them know this is the fast I'm talking about. In other words, are you fast? You develop the spiritual character, you behave a certain way. That's basically the nature of what he's talking about. And of course, the other one is, there's a lot in the chapter. I suggest we read it again. But make the Sabbath a delight. Make the Sabbath a delight. By the way, even the folks who worship on Sunday, yeah, they talk about Sunday best. Where do they get that from? From that verse. Make the Sabbath a light. They are mistaken when they say the Sabbath is Sunday, but that is where that comes from. So the point here we're making is that we need to magnify the things of God just by us changing the way we do things and following the lead of His Spirit. Thank you, sir, for enlightening us this morning. I would like, ladies and gentlemen, for us to go in our study today to take a general view of some things, and then we're going to zero in. So I don't have a lot of scriptures, but we're going to zoom in and get some, magnification of what is actually being stated in the scriptures. Because you and I are engaged in a battle. You probably hear me use this expression before. It is the nature of the Christian walk for us to be engaged in battle. Now the enemy's goal, that's Satan the devil, he's the chief one, so we call him the enemy, but he has the demons with him. The enemy's goal is to kill, steal, and destroy. Notice that now. Kill, steal, and destroy. And he may kill you if he get the opportunity. Or if he can kill you, he try to destroy what you're doing or destroy you. And he still can't get those, he's going to try to steal what he can from you. That is the nature of what he does. Let's go to John the 10th chapter. I want to clarify that just to make sure we're on the same page. Because it is easy for the church to overlook these things, not recognizing what God is doing, what He has called us to, so that we then can be forewarned and recognize the hand of the enemy. Verse 10, the thief, that's not a way of describing him.
10-10.
Yes, the thief comes not but to what? To steal. That's it. One of his job is to, and he's stealing, he's robbing a lot of people blind. He have a lot of different ways. We'll talk about some of those as we go along, but that's his overall goal. He's going to steal and to kill. He'll take your life. He's taking the life of a lot of people, even in the Church of God, because they are lacking understanding. So you come to steal, rob them, you know, you can rob you a lot of different ways, not just money. Rob you your time, rob you your health and so on, your witness and so on. They come to kill, steal, and to destroy. We need to recognize those are his three main goals. But Jesus says, but I, on the other hand, I am come that you might have life, Zoe, remember we talked about that before, and have it more abundantly. Not just existing, but abundant living. So that I want us to understand, this is the nature of our call. You can't go to war and say, well, I'm not going to fight. You're a Christian? Well, guess what? You're engaged in battle day in, day out. For the rest of your life, that's how it's going to be. So I am saying, though, we are engaged in any of the combination of those three objectives that the enemy has. This is the nature of our call. We are always engaged in any of those three attacks at some point coming against us. It follows logically then that we train and prepare for all of these engagements. We need to do some training. Well, I don't want anybody to teach me anything. Well, you are going to be in for some surprises. Because we are supposed to be trained and prepare for all these engagements. You know, many people are going to marvel when the enemy is exposed. Let's go to Isaiah, the 14th chapter. I want us to go back to Isaiah chapter 14. Because when Jesus unmasked this character down the road, many are going to see exactly who he really is. That same devil that has been causing all this trouble, killing, stealing, and destroying. He was bragging at some point in the past, and he says, verse 14, I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. In other words, he's going to be like God. He really thought so. And to a great extent, he still believes that. Verse 15, yet you shall be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. That's what Jesus is saying is going to happen to him. Verse 16, they that see you, in other words, when people's eyes get open, they that see you shall narrowly look upon thee and consider you. People are going to look at him and start to stare. That's Satan the devil. I remember years ago, they captured some murderer, and a lot of people run to the police station to go take a look at him. Well, here it is, they're taking a look at this being, and they consider him, saying, is this the man that made the earth to tremble? Is this him? We were scared of this little pipsqueak all this time. Is this the one that made the earth to tremble and did shake kingdoms? When people actually see the devil, you don't want to pray to see that kind of stuff. They're ugly. I mean, extremely ugly when you're seeing the spirit realm. But I'm just saying, when we now are, made complete spirit upon the return of Jesus Christ, and people are going to look at him and they're going to say, is this the one that made the world as a wilderness? Verse 17. This the same one that was doing all this trouble? Satan the devil? Yes. And destroyed the cities thereof that opened not the house of the his prisoners. Look at, he does a lot of trouble. A lot of things the devil been doing on planet Earth. And one of the biggest tricks he has going for him is that he doesn't exist. So some people foolishly don't believe this, and so he keep fooling them over and over. We have no such illusion. We in the Church of God cannot allow ourselves to be led astray. So I want us to be cognizant of the nature of our calling. Here things are running good, and all of a sudden you decide, I've decided to follow Jesus. You go around bragging, I have decided to follow Jesus. The people on the job start to act crazy. Your friends and relatives start to act like they don't know you. All kind of people start to act up. Who caused all this? Satan, the devil, and his henchmen. Don't be deceived. The nature of our calling is one where we are constantly in battle. We have some alluded to that early on, which we will cover as we go along. But I want us to be cognizant of what it is we're engaged in. Look how many people used to attend services, dressed all good, dressed up, come to service and give offerings and tithes and stuff like that. Then they just turn and go and follow the world. What happened? Satan the devil got to them. He's been around a long time. He's fooled a lot of people. He's carried on a lot of people. So when we finally see him after the millennium and people look and say, is this the one that's caused all this trouble? Him? We let him fool us? Anybody can be fooled if we're willing to pay attention to the wrong things. You know, you and I, ladies and gentlemen, we are engaged in three areas of defense, offense, and collaboration with the team. That's our goal. We need to recognize that is what we are supposed to be engaged in. Defense. First of all, you have to learn to defend yourself. That's why I said we are engaged in defense. We are engaged in offense. There are times that we're going to have to take the fight to the enemy. Here he is paralyzing these people in certain cities and stuff like that, hold them hostage, and nobody would go inside there with the gospel to try to share it with people. Tell them, listen, you need assistance. Look how long they've been clobbering the people over in Kilgores. And when we go over there, we saw what was happening, and we come back, and boy, sure enough, things are changing. They begin to see this, all the difference, night and day. People are going without food sometimes 3-4 days a week. We talk about children. And later on, here it is, we come now with same expenses. We just go around and we change things. We're going into enemy territory. So we are a marked bunch. Don't forget that. You have a mark. He's watching you. He's watching you very good. Samson didn't realize that. They were watching him. So here it is, we're engaged in defense, offense, and collaboration with the team. Doesn't necessarily have to be our church group, but we're collaborating. So the three main areas we all need to be praying about and get involved with. Now it is important, ladies and gentlemen, then, that we define our position. What is your stance? What is the expression we were reading over, we were shouting out a while ago about, we were talking about God, we made a declaration. Jesus never fails. We were making that declaration, didn't we? We were making it clear to the devil. He never, because he tried to tell us, you know, he doesn't want you to be like him. Well, he does do that simply because you're tired, you know. No, Jesus never fails. We were making that declaration. Your back is against the wall, things are going against you. You're hearing all kind of negative news, and you have to be firm with him to let him know Jesus never fails. So I am saying to you, ladies and gentlemen, we need to define our position. Because as we learn from the Russia-Ukraine battle, you heard the war still going on. Many of the Russians did not know the true mission of their trip to Ukraine. Some of them really believed they were going down there to denazify Ukraine. And some soldiers, they were engaged with some local people. They were not soldiers, they were just local people, but they had guns. And they take on these Russian soldiers and outgun them. They were shocked because they didn't expect them to have guns to begin with. The Russian vehicle broke down and they come to these people's place trying to act up. And the folks just pull their guns out, start to shoot them. And one of the guys, after, you know, because he gets captured, and he explained, he said, well, we didn't expect them to have guns like that. Some of their guns were better than the ones we had as soldiers. And they outgunned them. Captured 10 of them, if I remember correctly, it was on YouTube, and carried them to the local authorities, who then turned them over to the military. But my point is that the soldiers just thought they were going down there for a joyride, so to speak. Remember the president, even the president declared, we're going for a 3-day military, it's a 3-day military exercise or something of that nature, but that's the point. He expected to be over in 3 days. Now we're going on 4 years, or was it? Yes, almost 4 years. He's still involved. They did not understand the nature. Well, you and I need to understand the nature of our involvement. In the book of Matthew, the 10th chapter, verse 16, Jesus was making it clear to the folks that he sent out, and it is true for you and I today. Matthew chapter 10, verse 16, he says, "Behold, I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves." We're going out as sheep. Sheep can't defend themselves. And we're going to go among wolves. "Be ye therefore wise as serpents and harmless as doves." He's telling us, exercise some wisdom about you. We were talking about wisdom of God a couple of weeks ago. We need to be on top of our game. So I'm telling you now, this is the nature of our Christian walk. Now, let's take it a step further. What is in our toolbox then? We're going to need some tools. What do we have in our toolbox?
Gifts.
Well, we have the gifts, but there are two. We're going to categorize them.
Faith.
Faith, that's true. But we're going to get into that in just a second. Let's look at the big category. Because we are at war, so I want us to turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 10. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, so that we can get some clear picture of the way God sees it. He wants us to know. Well, in verse 3, notice what he starts out in verse 3. Can somebody read that for me, please, loud and clear? Verse 3.
"For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God for pulling down strongholds."
All right, pause for a second. That's verse 4. Is what version is that?
New King James.
All right, verse 3 says,
"Casting down..."
No, verse 3. "If our gospel..."
What verse did I just read?
You just read 4. "If our gospel is hid..." Because we all need to know. This is what I'm saying now. See, a lot of folks don't know this. They just go and they follow sometimes their friend and they go to church and they just... come to church with me and they go through. That's why a lot of people keep going around in circles. So he's saying now, if our gospel is hid, it is hid to them that are lost. Are people, all who go to services or members of church, really understand the gospel? I don't think so. Look at the way they behave. So he says, if the gospel is hid, it is hid from those who are lost. They just simply don't know. Oh yeah, they may have heard it, but it doesn't register. Now you can tell some people that they are lost, but they really are. How do I know? Because of what they say and what they do. So Paul is making reference to it, and he says, if our gospel is hid, if it is not shown, in other words, it's not revealed to them, it's because they are among the people that are lost. They don't really have the spiritual, I should say, capacity to grasp it. So it is hid from those who are lost, in whom the God of this world... that's chapter 4.
Chapter
10, verse what? Verse 4. That was chapter 4. My Lord, it fitting so well.
Yeah, that's
"For though we..." Okay, yes, you're right. "For though we walk in the flesh..." That's right, verse 3.
Mm-hmm.
"We do not war after the flesh." Let's go back and look at this again, because I've done this before. I want to look at chapter 4. It's supposed to be 10 and 4.
You're
in
Corinthians 4 now.
No. Yes, let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 4. My Lord, this is...
That's
thank
what
you.
I was looking at. I'm like, wait.
Thank you. No, you know what? Because it fit into it with what I'm saying, where I'm going with this so well, that I myself really got taken up into it. Because I was going to go to 4 after. All right, the point was this. The gospel is hidden from the people. And how do we understand where we are?
Corinthians Corinthians 4, what verse?
Verse 3.
Okay.
How do we really understand? We have to hear the gospel. And so it is hid from those who lost, who the God of this world has blinded the minds of those who believe not. Lest the light of the glorious gospel is shining unto them, or be revealed unto them. So this is the nature of what is going on. I'm getting ahead of myself, okay? So that is the nature of what Satan is doing. He's keeping the people in darkness. You have the expression, the dark ages?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the glorious days of the Catholic Church. Yes, the glorious days of the Catholic Church were the dark ages, where almost nobody understood the Bible, and people weren't really what I call technologically advanced. So later on, when we started to get light, they call it Enlightenment period. So the darkness was during their time, all right? So the gospel is there, but let's go back to chapter 10, which is where I had in my notes. For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh. You're correct about that. And it says, for the weapons of our warfare, that's what I have in my notes here, the weapons of our warfare are mighty. So here it is, we're involved in war now. And we're going to be involved in war. So that what we have in the toolbox, certain type of weapons, and the weapons of our warfare are mighty. Let's go back and look at verse 4 again and read the whole thing again, please. Go ahead, sir.
For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God for pulling down strongholds.
All right, pause right here for a minute. He says, for the weapons of our warfare. So we're involved in war. And they're not carnal. What does that mean?
It's a spiritual war.
Yes. So we're not talking about physical war then. They're not fleshly. They're not carnal. But they are mighty. They are mighty. The weapons that we have are mighty through God. To the pulling down of strongholds. What is a stronghold?
Anything that's coming against you.
No, hold on. No, a stronghold.
It's something that has.
Just like the name describes.
Oh, have you kind of dark tangled. You can't really get out of it.
All right. The stronghold, when you're dealing with demon possession, you probably hear them use the expression, who's the strong man? The stronghold is where you have a whole lot of that type of force. What's the expression? Congregate, you know, they're gathered together in that place. And it's hard to overtake that area, whatever it is. It's hard because they have enough firepower there. That's a stronghold for them.
Is it a person necessarily?
It's just an area where they have enough defense.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody come against them, they have enough firepower to fight you off.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the spirits, by the way, they operate like that too, the demons.
Mm-hmm.
So when Jesus said, ask the strong man, bind the strong man is the head demon over all of them. When we went to Africa, I asked the pastor, I said, ask her, what's the name of the leader? What it was talking about is the strong man.
You in Kenya?
Yes. All right, they tell me the name. I can't pronounce it. Some strange name, but anyway. I knew I was going to be dealing with that before. But the key is, because you see, you want to be able to recognize him by name. Let him know you know who he is. When Jesus was cast out of the demon, he said, what is my name? What did he say? Legion. Because we are what? Many. What's a legion?
We mean a lot of thousands.
It's about 1,000, right? So it's not just one. You'd be surprised. Can one person have that many demons? Yes. It is the strangest thing. But anyway, that's the stronghold. They pack up there. You remember him saying when they clean this place out, and if it's not filled, then that demon come back and say, hey, ain't nothing here. Let's go get 7 more worse than me, and then we all come back and we all stay there. That's a stronghold for them. And so they said the second state of that fuzzy person is now worse than before. They got 7 times the amount of demons they had before, because the things weren't taken care of properly. That's a stronghold. So he says, our weapons, though, are mighty through God, and it will allow us to pull down strongholds. See? That's the nature of what we have in our toolbox. Casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalt itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. That our weapons are able to bring down all of these things. Casting down even imaginations. People got a lot of lofty ideas, you know. And every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ, and having in a readiness in revenge all disobedience when your obedience is fulfilled. So the point is this: God is ready now to not only tear it down but to punish. But my point is, we have weapons to deal with this thing, because the nature of, we're going to see, the nature of our war is spiritual. And we now are able, he's letting us know up front that we have tools to handle these things, regardless of what it is. They talk about these different hypersonic weapons and stuff like that they have in the wars and so on. You know, these missile, bunker busting missiles and so on. That's the nature of their kind of weapon. Well, we have some that can deal with the spirit realm and bind these demons, so that they can't run around and cause no more trouble in certain people. We can drive them out, command them to stay out, and set the captive free. Jesus cast out them demons, and what do you call them, swines? Thousands of them just run down the hill, right into the sea. Did he have all those? Yes, nobody could have bind him. He had that many demons in him. So what I'm saying is the nature of what we're dealing with now with spiritual, as you pointed out, and our warfare method is mighty through God. On our own, we can't do it. But in God, we can. All right? Something else we want to point out about the nature of our toolbox, because we're going to spend a little time on this. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 6. Because when you look at this, the nature of it now, this will, most of the time we're going to spend in this message, the nature for recall. Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 10, or really 9 really, talks about being obedient, you know, the children to the parents, fathers, don't provoke your children, and so on. In other words, personal relationship in the household and so on. He's talking about that. But when you come to verse 10, he says, finally, my brethren, that's Ephesians chapter 6, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. So he's letting us know now, we need to be strong, but this is going to be in the Lord. Now, what happens if you're not in the Lord? You can't be strong. That's what Samson discovered. He wasn't strong in the Lord, and after a while the spirit departed and left him. He was by himself. They beat him up. Now when we are engaged in battle, we need to realize now we can be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. And so as you were pointing out, I think somebody mentioned it earlier, put on the whole armor of God. We are familiar with this. That you might be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. So he's saying then, the nature, I'm saying what we have now, we're going to put on, we're going to go break it down a little more, but we're going to put on, he said, put on the whole armor, not just part of it, but all of it. And that way, when he come, the wiles means the little tricks he try to pull and so on. Are you fooling a lot of people with the same little trick over and over because they don't study their Bible? But my point here is that we are going to put on the whole armor so that we then will be able to stand against any little trick or anything the enemy or his henchmen shall try against us. And he's saying of the nature of it, because for we are wrestling not against flesh and blood. That's what we were talking about earlier. We're not fighting against flesh and blood, but against principalities. What does principalities mean? It means that you have a person, or I should say a being, and under them are the little demons. I don't know how you describe them, but they are on their subject to this principality here, and they obey this particular one. So under them might be 10. You recall when Daniel was fasting, he says he was fighting against the prince of Persia. How many days was he fasting for?
21.
21 days. They were engaged in this fight, trying to outdo the prince of Persia. And then Michael come on, help him, take him on. And of course, together they overpower him. How they fight, I don't know all the deals. But I know they get strength by the way we pray, or for persistence and consistency and so on. So we are fighting now against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world. Of this world, so they are the rulers. They are in charge. You wonder why certain cities, they behave a certain way. There is a certain city in Full South Fulton. I try to avoid it like the plague. I just don't like the appearance of it. This the spirit about it. I don't know why people even live there, but anyway, I just avoid it. I don't like that principality. I go there, I just recognize that spirit and I stay away from there. You have a lot of people involved in seance. Lodge and masonry, that kind of stuff. I try not to go there at all. And so my point though is that he's saying now we are engaged in this kind against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. So we are engaged against these demon spirits that are in charge of certain things. And if we are not putting on the whole armor of God, they're going to rule against us every time, and they're going to end up having the victory. So we have to be prepared. All right? Now let's take it a step further. Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, he's telling us in verse 13, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and have done all to stand. Now remember, we said we have offense, we have defense, we're defending ourselves. Because sometimes you don't have to do nothing, people just come and pick on you for no reason. The devil stirred them up. So you have to learn to defend yourself. You go to the job, people just start to crack jokes or talk about you for no real reason. The devil stirred them up. And you're going to have to be prepared. But also, we may need to help evangelize and go into another area where we're going to be on the offensive. So we're going to have to be able to be prepared for that also. And in addition, there are times when you're just going to have to hold the fort. Stay right there and don't back down. After a while, they'll go away. And so he says, wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that you might be able to withstand in the evil day, and have done all to stand. So you have done all you need now. Here it is, you're prepared. You go. You get some bad news from somebody or whoever it is, and you decide, man, I'm not going to back down. I'm going to hold on. What did we declare earlier? What did we declare about Jesus? He never fails. See, we're going to hold. We know. I don't care. Listen, he will tell you. He'll send people come and try to tell you. Man, you never know what God may do. I know what he will do because I read his book. And he promised you healing. So don't tell me you never know what he may do. Sometime you win, sometime you don't. kind of reasoning is that? That's not a consistent God. No, he's consistent. And so we have to be cognizant of these things. You'd be surprised people in the church talk like that. And so wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all to stand. What's the evil day? The day when he comes and decides to launch whatever attack against you. That's the people say. Well, I remember a certain day. Remember when, John F. Kennedy was shot?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, they can still tell you what they were doing. What time of the day, the evil day, everybody remember. Worldwide. We heard them on the radio. In Jamaica, you had two radio stations coming through on the same frequency, never seen that before. Down there in Jamaica. And they were talking about, John F. Kennedy was shot. We used to play like that, sometimes put our finger in our nose, but we covered sound like those people on the reporters. Yeah, but they and you remember all those. So here it is, we're saying now, we put on all this and we're going to be able to stand. Stand therefore, verse 14, having your loins girded about with truth. So you're going to put your belt around your waist. Have your loins girded about with truth. How many, what version? Go ahead.
It says, stand firm then with the belt of truth buckled around your waist.
All right, pause. Honey, what's your version?
Having girded your waist with truth.
There you go. So the point is this, we need to make sure then we know what the truth says. The truth about the gospel. The truth about whatever it is we're engaged in. And so he's telling you now, you are going to make sure you know what this word says in the particular situation. And having on the breastplate of righteousness. All right, what does your version say?
It says with the breastplate of righteousness in place.
Okay, honey, what is yours?
Having put on the breastplate of righteousness.
All right, there you go. So the point is this, we're going to put them on. Breastplate, cover yourself. And your feet shod, because that's how they used to be dressed militarily back at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So you put on your boots, as we would say, your shoes. You shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. So he's telling us, just learn the gospel, understand all these things. Be prepared. And above all, take the shield of faith. The shield is going to be able to guard against whatever spirit or arrows they throw against you and so on. All right? So you're going to have the shield of faith. And of course, as you were pointing out earlier, that was one of the things that you're going to have now. Faith. If sometimes you listen, and I'm saying it's sad, but you listen to some people in the church and they talk as if they don't know what the scripture says, and you never know what may happen. They pray, but they don't really expect anything. That's not faith. Faith is believing what he's promised that he's going to do. He's going to do. You keep his word. So when you say, you never know what he may do. Well, we're not so sure. Well, listen, you're not operating in faith. So you have the shield of faith, wherewith you shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked one. What are the fiery darts?
The trials and stuff that come at you.
All right, so the trials come, and they shoot these darts, or arrows, or we would say in modern language, at us. So folks try to convince us now that you can't always rely on the Bible. But it's a minister telling me, I'm glad it worked for you, but don't tell anybody else that it worked. What kind of reason is this? But the point is this, and they're throwing these things out, and if you are young in faith, or if you are not bold enough to rebuke that spirit, you, after a while, just kind of give up. You look at the world just kind of give up. Now, we don't have to know all the answers, but we know some basic things. God never fails, as we heard earlier. We know full well he's going to keep his promise. We know what his promise is. All his promises are yes and amen. And we have some basic things. So we are hearing now when we look at, so he's telling you, put on this whole armor, because if you don't, you know, you're going to be against people who are going to really come up against you. They think they're trying to help you. I remember years ago, my dad was in an accident. It wasn't his fault. But this gentleman was trying to convince my mom that the people who, he gave them a ride. They begged him a ride, and he didn't really want to, but the folks that were with him, he said, I'll give them a ride. He went 10 miles on the road and they crashed. And so folks were saying, no, well, those people can sue him, you know, to get money. They never did, but the point is, folks were trying to convince him. I remember this gentleman, he got angry, and he was telling my mom, he said, here this man claims that he's your husband's friend, and yet he's talking about all these people can sue him, giving them ideas. Of course, nothing came out of it anyway. But my point was that they're giving you all these negative comments, trying to convince you to, what's more or less, give up in what you believe. So we're going to put on the breastplate of righteousness. Righteousness. What did Jesus say? The prince of this world comes, but he finds what? Nothing in me. Mm-hmm. Why? Because Jesus knows he is upright. He has on the breastplate of righteousness. So yeah, the devil's going to come, but he nothing can say against Jesus, because Jesus is going to do what is right. He has on the breastplate of righteousness. You're the same way. And so the point is that he can't accuse you. Because remember now, what do we have? The accuser of the brethren is constantly, what is he doing? He running, trying to go tell the Lord, you know what so-and-so did? He's constantly pointing out stuff. And sometimes what he's saying is true. But Jesus have to rebuke him, as you saw in Zechariah, the third chapter. I've already cleaned him up. I've already forgiven him. A lot of people are going to talk about Samson and how he messed up. But when we see Samson in the kingdom, he's going to look totally different. And nobody's going to remember the negative stuff that Samson did. It's all under the blood. The blood has covered all that. So you and I need to be mindful of these things. So we're going to put on the breastplate of righteousness. Your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. And above all, take the shield of faith, wherewith you shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked. And take on the helmet of salvation. How many people would want to engage in these things and don't even know Jesus? I mean, isn't that a waste of time? To go out there and try to take on all these people and yet you still don't know Jesus yourself? What sense does that make? So take on the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which somebody else mentioned that earlier, which is the Word of God. So you need to know the Word. So you're going to have to be trained. You have to be prepared, because you're going to have to put on all this to go handle the circumstances in which we are fulfilling our mission. Praying always with all prayer and supplication. What does that mean? Praying always. So we're going to have the attitude where we're going to pray about things. That's a good idea. You want to pray, of course, according to the Word. But you're going to pray always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, and watching whereunto with all perseverance and supplication for all the saints. So we're going to be looking out for one another, aren't we? We're going to be praying and looking out for one another. So when we visit, you know, I visit other congregations. Don't do it often, but whenever I do, and they ready to make announcement, I start to make note. Then this person need prayer for this particular area and so on. You're going to look out for the saints. And for me, Paul is saying, that utterance may be given unto me. So if you know somebody else who is speaking, you pray that God will inspire them, that they can give the type of message that will inspire the people, that I may open my mouth boldly to make known the mystery of the gospel. Back then it was a mystery to a lot of people what the gospel of Jesus Christ was, and today it really is still a mystery. Strange. For which I am an ambassador in bonds. In other words, he's obligated to do it. He's an ambassador. And by the way, you and I are ambassadors also. And therein I may speak boldly as I ought to speak. So there it is. He's saying, no, you put on. So these are the things that we have in our toolbox. We didn't even go into the specifics yet. But we're going to touch on a little now about what else we need. Our training program, because you see, that involves now Bible study. Group. Every Tuesday we do one. At least that's our goal. And also we encourage you to set up your own schedule where you are constantly coming before the Lord to study. So Bible study. Now, our training program, part of what you have there for yourself is Bible study, personal reading and research. You know, we don't read only the Bible or the booklets. We want to be able to read other information about what is going on. You need to know about AI. You need to know about, you know, computers and stuff like that, some basic things. So you're going to have to set aside time where you study and expand your knowledge. You read and do research on these things. We need to know about nutrition. This morning I didn't know before that broccoli has 2.8% I think this was the number they gave, of protein. Broccoli has protein, yes. Didn't know that. Just discovered that this morning. So you're going to read and learn an understanding about nutrition and things like that. Finances. A lot of different stuff. We're going to do our own personal training and research. Then we're going to do fasting, where we're going to fast, where we discipline our body to come in line with the teaching and the direction of the Spirit. Yes, we're going to have to set aside time to fast. You'll be surprised. That's a time when more people are going to offer you things to eat than anything else. How they seem to know, I don't know. But they seem to offer you at that time than any other time. You're going to practice in your daily devotion, your own worship. You're going to have to, yes, practice worship. That's how you're going to get the Spirit on you. Worship by yourself, away from everybody else. You guess in collectively with group, yes, but there are times when you're going to your daily devotion. You want to worship the Lord. Sing to Him. Not just what they have on the radio. In other words, just repeat those words. But my point is that you want to practice so it becomes a part of you in your spirit man. When you're in trouble, that's what's going to come out. So if you don't put anything in there, you're not going to have it to come out. Continue. What else do we do in part of our training? We want to have fellowship. A lot of people tell you they're Christians. When's the last time they've been to a church fellowship? Assembly with the brethren? They can't tell. And they somehow want to convince you that they are in fellowship? No, they don't realize they're out of whack. They just don't know. You're going to fellowship with believers. And I'm talking about everybody else now, with believers. So what else do you do in the training program? You're going to be given tithing and offering. You get involved in those things. That's critical. But my point is that you set aside your training program. You see what, you get my idea? I want us to get your own training program. You get a training program, you're going to, because you're going to need to be trained. We were dealing with this lady once, and all of a sudden this demon talking to her and just started to tell this person, I didn't know who the person was, but he called a name and said, so-and-so been stealing money out of the offering. they knew the person. Other people there knew who the person was. I didn't know it. But they called him by name. So-and-so been stealing money out of the offering. And you know about it. They tell the demon, just say to one of the person in the room, say, you know about it. And he couldn't say nothing because I don't know any of those people. But my point is that stuff like that happened. They observe. So you want to make sure, you know, you add on the breastplate of righteousness, as we read earlier. Now, that's in the training program. Well, what about our operation then? How do you operate? What do you do? Well, we give assistance to others. We can, you know, a lot of different ways. We can teach. There are times when we have the privilege of teaching. We teach others. We want to make sure we study so we have substance to impart, because as priests, lips must have knowledge. So you teach. You give materially. Look at what Luke chapter 6 verse 38 says. I think sometimes we overlook these things. Somebody find it for me, please, and read it. Luke chapter 6 and verse 38.
Give and it will be given to you. Is that what you
want? All right, yes.
Give and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, making together, and shaking together, and running over will be put into your bosom. For with the same measure that you use it, will be measured back to you.
So he's saying the same way you give is the same way you're going to receive it. The same measure, the freeness in which you do it, good measure, you're one of those generous, where people are going to be generous with you. And so I'm saying now you're going to practice now liberally, you know, you're going to use wisdom, but you to give, that's the way you operate, because the same measure that you use is what is measured back to you. That's how God do it. That's how you determine. And you actually set the standard. Sometimes we don't realize that's the case. What else can we do? Short-term loans. We can give other people short-term loans. You know, somebody come and borrow from you. You go ahead and you give it to them if you have it. And of course, you know, that's different from when you're giving now. Anything you lend to them, be prepared to lose it. So, in other words, if they run into some serious trouble and they can't pay it back, you don't have to worry. Prayer and agreement. How else are you going to operate? Prayer for agreement. Matthew 18:19. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
What are we doing there? If two of you...
gather together in his name.
If two of you shall agree together on anything, then I will what? Do it. So you're going to pray in agreement. Many, many times, ladies and gentlemen, I pick up the phone, I call, and I say to my wife, "Honey, let's pray about this." The implication is we're going to pray in agreement. And so we point that out. And of course, the point is that God answers just like we expect him. Prayer for agreement. Now, there are the times when you may pray in agreement with other people. There are times when you might just need to pray in faith by yourself. Matthew 21:21. The prayer of faith, Matthew 21:21, James chapter 5, verse 16, those are scriptures substantiating what I am trying to share here, James. Chapter 5.
James 5.
Mm-hmm. Starting with verse 14, what's it? Alright, starting with 14. Is any sick among you? And the prayer of faith shall save the sick, verse 15, and the Lord shall raise him up, verse 16. Confess your faults one to another, and pray one for another that you may be healed. So we're going to be praying for one another. We just automatically take this on. Because remember now, the measure you use is what's going to be measured against you, measured for you, rather. So you're praying one for another, as he says there, that you may be healed. The effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. So here it is now. It matters a whole lot. But you're going to pray, because the point is that he's going to give it back to you in that manner. People pray for you. And in addition, you get a reward there for, you know, when you make your request. All right? So these are some of the operating mode, ladies and gentlemen, about what you and I need to do in the nature of our call. So what have we covered so far then? We are engaged in a battle that is going to be lifelong for the rest of our life. We're in three main areas. We have defense, offense, and then collectively as a group or a team. And of course, we have the nature of our toolbox, which is the weapons of our warfare. They are spiritual, they're not physical. And then we put on the old armor of God that we just learned about a while ago. And as a result, then we're going to put ourselves through a training program. Very important. We have to study. He said, I don't have that much time. So take a little time out. You need to spend some time building your spirit man up. Otherwise, you're going to run into stumbling blocks. And then you have your own mode of operation, which is certain things. I just behave a certain way at a certain time. And that's just the way I'm going to operate. I set that up as my mode of operation. All right. And then the final category I want to go ahead and talk about in the nature of our call is receiving from God. As a result, then, what do? We receive from the Lord. You know, we receive a lot of things. You have spiritual outpouring. At times when you get into certain groups, you pour the spirit a certain way. And the joy of the people is really enhanced. It's the blessings. Remember he said, bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse and prove me now here, which says the Lord of hosts, if I will not open the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing that you will not have room to receive it. He's pouring out his blessings there. We're learning to receive from the Lord. What else? Assistance from others. You can receive assistance through others. So the people come and say, Brother Brown, the Lord asked me to go ahead and do so and so for you. Just like that. Just like that. Team engagements, which we'll talk about more in the future. But I just want to let you know these are just some of the ways we can receive from them. And there's another one I want to make sure we don't miss out on this. Psalm 34. And verse 7. I want everybody to take a look at that for me, please. Psalm 34 and verse 7. All right. Because the psalm started, I'll bless the Lord at all times. But what does verse 7 says?
The angel of the Lord encamps all around those who fear him and delivers them.
Yes. You're surrounded. You're in battle. Guess who you have around you? All them angels. Thousands of them. If they weren't there, we would be mincemeat for the enemy. But the angels are there. We don't even know. Sometimes they're fighting. Things are, you know, something that's not right. You go pray through you. God will show you. The enemy was trying to pull some stunt. Your demon, your spirits, your guardian angels, as we use the expression, they take him on, beat him up, run him off, and they leave you alone. So I'm saying, ladies and gentlemen, this is the nature of the call that you and I have. And so this is really a brief overview of our calling. Jesus promised us he will not leave us. He'll always be with us until the end. So I'm going to encourage you again to continue in faith, go in faith, and fulfill your mission. Go with God. That's the idea. That's the final, statement, marching orders to you. Go with God. Fulfill your mission because he promised he's going to be with you until the end. And so we have that assurance. And as we read earlier, we shouted out earlier, he never fails. So I just thought I'd just go ahead and cover these things, ladies and gentlemen, in regards to the nature of our call. And you and I are blessed to be a part of what God is doing at this time. Thank you so much. See you in the next lesson.